Kid Felcher, 1,000 welcomes to the Village Oak Tree for July 10th, 2024. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell, and I wish to thank everyone who's watching or listening for joining me today. So today I have Dr. George Maurer, an educator, former Air Force service member, and author of Critical Race Theory in Your School, How to Fight Back. So now I'm going to let him come on here and tell his story. We'll get a little bit about what he's about with this critical race theory stuff, or CRT as they call it. So how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Terrence. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Not a problem. So my first question for you is, what's your definition of critical race theory?
Well, critical race theory is basically Marxism. And they use oppressor versus oppressed ideology. The original version is rich versus poor. You're only poor because the rich people have stolen things for you. But what they've done is, in critical race theory, they've taken that basic division of people where they, you know, inflict a tension in between them, and they make it about race. And so what they do is they tell, children of color that their life is difficult because white people have designed the system to keep them down. They're told that white people oppress them, whether consciously or unconsciously. They say things like white people are treated better in society and they are treated worse in society simply because of the color of their skin. And they tell children of color that they should be angry at white children for things like slavery in the past history of the United States. That's critical race theory. And they say that they're working toward positive racial outcomes, but what they're doing is they're inflicting negative racial tensions in between these children and then say they're going to somehow get a positive outcome out of it. And it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Okay. So, you know, one of the things that was, you know, part of your profile here is, what's the difference between CRT and ethnic studies?
That's a very big deal. Again, critical race theory is the bad. What they do is they focus relentlessly on only the negative aspects of our history without giving due credit to the positive outcomes that we've had. We've come a long way in race relations in the last 75 years or so. Okay. And critical race theory gives no credit for that at all. They act like, you know, this is 1955 Mississippi. And, you know, and any black man walking down the street who decides to flirt with a white woman is, you know, could face a mob, you know, to do horrible things to him at any given moment, which, of course, is simply not true. And then we have ethnic studies.
You go to Mississippi or Louisiana, you might have a different idea.
Yeah. We're talking about 75 years ago in these places,
right.
You know, it's not like that anymore. I mean, I lived in Louisiana for a couple of years, and I'm not saying there aren't racist people down there, but it's not like, you know, your average person of color is under the threat of death for just looking at somebody the wrong way, like perhaps they would have been in the 1950s. So, but then you have ethnic studies, and ethnic studies is the positive, healthy exploration of one's culture, leading to self-confidence and self-awareness, which is they are the things that all of us need to be successful in life. And what's most important about these ethnic studies is that students at risk, especially students of color, you know, they can use education to possibly get out of difficult situations. Perhaps their parents are in survival mode. They're having a hard time keeping food on the table, a roof over their heads. Education is a way out for these children, okay? And so these ethnic studies classes for kids who are, let's say, disinterested in school, these ethnic studies courses have been proven by Stanford University to increase their interest, increase their grades. All the good things go up, all the bad things go down. And so they begin applying themselves in school and possibly could lead to college, perhaps a trade school, whatever, whatever. But it leads to giving them a foundation that might make their life better than they grew up in. They're going to have a better life than their parents had growing, you know, when he was growing up or she growing up. And this is such an invaluable tool for these children. And critical race theory is basically stealing it from these children. They are keeping these children in these horrible schools. Now, we just had an example of this in South Carolina. South Carolina has had an advanced placement ethnic studies program for African American studies. And they were, the students who were going to it were enjoying it. They were helping possibly at-risk students. And for all purposes, you know, it was a very successful program, but they just ended it in South Carolina. And they never really gave a reason. And some of us, including me, I suspect they did it because there was a bill going through the legislature that said you can't teach, no longer, you cannot teach courses anymore that teach one race is superior to another, that one race is guilty for crimes of the past, that one race oppresses other races, whether they know it or not. That without saying critical race theory, what they mean is critical race theory. And this bill required a fact-based, historically accurate version of history. So now, again, without saying it, they dropped this African studies course without saying why. And it's my suspicion that this particular course was infused with CRT. And they knew that and if they tried to continue the program, they were probably going to face some legal battles to keep it going. And so anyway, that bill actually just failed like 2 days ago. But however, the Advanced Placement African American Studies program is gone. Well, the local schools can teach it, but now they have to pay for it. And again, we're looking at-risk students. You know, those are the ones who are going to need this course the most. And they're probably at the schools in the most poor districts, the schools that will have the most difficulty coming up with money to pay for this course, and the state's not going to pay for it anymore. Mm-hmm. These local schools will have to pay for it. Plus, the people who take it, in order to get college credit for this class, you're going to have to pay, I think it's, $1,000 maybe? That might be a little high. But anyway, they're going to have to pay to take that final exam. Again, the people who are at most risk, the people who need this course the most, it's being stolen from them, from these critical race theorists. So anyway, that's a difference between ethnic studies and CRT. They are two very different things. Ethnic studies has great promise. CRT is stealing it.
So it brings, that kind of leads into another question that I hadn't really, you know, thought about. So let's take this example that you just gave. Could they rewrite the curriculum to make it work?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, I'm trying to remember which state. As a matter of fact, one of the states, I think it might be Virginia, they're going through it right now. They had an ethnic studies program that is being rewritten as we speak. And what they're doing is they're removing the CRT code words out of the ethnic studies curriculum. So they're removing words like oppression, white supremacy, systemic racism, marginalization, and they're replacing it with more neutral language. So instead of beginning with the premise, like critical race theory begins with the premise that all white people are racist and all people of color are being systemically prejudiced against. Okay. The system is designed to keep them down. And so by removing these things, now we can kind of get into the true ethnic studies where students of color learn about their history. They learn about, yeah, some pretty difficult things. And of course, it has to be age appropriate. You can't introduce like just over the top issues to young children who are 5 and 6 years old. You've got to make it a little bit neutral for them. But you want it to be accurate and age appropriate and truthful. You don't want it to be a propaganda machine. And that's what critical race theory is. Critical race theory is propaganda teaching children that America is the most racist country in the world, that white people, all of them, are racist. And if you happen to be white, you're a racist, whether you know it or not. And the thing is, these kids, when they start the school, you know, they may not even, they probably don't even recognize race. I've got a couple of photos on my Facebook page for my book, which is called Critical Race Theory in Your School, How to Fight Back by Dr. George Maurer. Just the title of my book. That's my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. And there's pictures of like, I got a photo of a white boy and an African-American boy, their best friends, and they thought they would trick their teachers. So they went and they got the same haircut. And they came back to school the next day, and they thought that since they had the exact same haircut, no one would be able to tell them apart. So then, you know, and then they pulled some tricks like, you know, one kid's, you know, they switched seats kind of a thing. And they thought the teacher wouldn't know the difference, you know. And that's the innocence that these children have sometimes. Right. And what critical race theory does is it steals this innocence. There was a group called Moms for Liberty, and they were investigating a reading program called Wit and Wisdom. And how the group started was the president, Ms. Steeman, her first name slips me at the moment, but her daughter played with children of all races. Mm-hmm. Always referred to it as the boy in the blue shirt and the girl in the yellow sneakers. And, you know, never once did she ever recognize someone by race. They had her watch one, well, her class watched one 13-minute CRT video, and the phrases, that black girl and that white boy, became permanent fixtures in her language after, from that point forward. So if the children aren't racist when they start a critical race theory course, they will be when it's over, because the school is going, the program is going to make sure they become racist.
That's not a good thing.
No, it's ridiculous. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah. So, I mean, that kind of tells me the answer to my other question. So how about this? I mean, this is kind of like beyond the school systems. So if you get outside the school systems, do you feel like there's anywhere in American society that we can talk about CRT?
Well, safely? here, but you have to understand the whole system is designed to support critical race theory. You know, it's beyond the school curriculums. And now don't get me wrong. It's not in every school. I have looked at a couple of online courses where I didn't see any critical race theory, but there are plenty that have it. And so, but it's supported by the teachers' unions. You know, the at an NEA conference a couple of years ago, they had something called New Business Item 39, and, you know, nice, bland topic or subject line, so no one could figure out what it was. New Business Item 39 called Critical Race Theory Appropriate and a reasonable defense of CRT in the country. At the very same conference, the American Federation of Teachers, also attending, got up and made a big speech about how critical race theory is not taught in schools and how it's being imagined like people like you and me. It's just our imagination. It's not really happening. So, I mean, the Secretary of Education went on The View a couple of years ago, and one of the lovely ladies at The View said, "So is critical race theory taught in American schools or what?" And he goes, "Well, you know, I don't think so." "Well, where is it taught?" "Well, maybe in law school, I think." Okay. Nice exchange, buddy. But there's one problem with all that. While he was on The View, the Department of Education was working on a brand new education initiative that was chock full of critical race theory. They were putting the finishing touches on this brand new education initiative. And again, the words critical race theory, and I read it, the words critical race theory were not in there, but the words oppression, marginalization, systemic racism, all of it was in there. And the other thing about Dr. Cardona, our Secretary of Education, he was the Secretary of Education for the state of Connecticut before coming to Washington. One of the very last things he did was create an education initiative for the state of Connecticut that was chock full of CRT. Again, I read it. I didn't see the words critical race theory in there, but I found oppression, systemic racism, white privilege, marginalization. All of those words and all those themes were embedded in there. So Dr. Cardona not only went on The View and lied about critical race theory, and if he wasn't lying about critical race theory, then he has no business being in the position that he's in because he didn't know what it was. Okay. Yeah. So he doesn't know what it is, or he's lying about it. There's no third option there. There's no third option. Mm. And it's just, I mean, and it's just one example after another like that in my book. And it's just, it's crazy. It really is.
Well, I mean, it's almost like it'd be almost hard to weed that out completely of society. I mean, people are going to talk about it. I mean, I kind of agree with you in respect to the younger children. I would like to see the innocence of children continue as much as possible and let them get as old as possible. And of course, you know, I've got children of my own, so it's easy to send the kids off to school, and the parents could be just as, you know, perfect as you possibly can. But then when they bring stuff home from school, you know, then what? You know, you gotta kind of figure it out at home. Well, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, and you know, just because this kid said something doesn't make it right, yada yada yada. You know,
sure.
And it's a constant battle as far as being a parent is concerned. Fighting against the schools doing this stuff, you know, I mean, that's a whole different animal. Now you're talking about confronting school boards and all kinds of stuff like that, which, given recent history in the last 3 or 4 years, we see how many battles that's gone on. I mean, I'm a news hound, and I watch all this stuff in the news feeds, and some of the stuff is outright ridiculous. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, where's this going to end? And I'm definitely not a favor of Moms for Liberty, simply because they seem to be all on one side. They don't have a neutral. It's like, come on, you know, I'm one of those, I believe that there should be age appropriate books set aside. So if you're a senior in high school, you know, you're a little more sensible in that because of your age and your education at this point, where there are certain books that, you know, you're smart enough by that point to be able to weed this stuff out for yourself. And, you know, most kids who got even halfway decent education are even smart enough to ask questions, and that's okay. You know, and, you know, you kind of work it down from there. I mean, obviously what a high school senior can read is not appropriate for a first grader. I mean, that's a given, you know?
Yeah. So the high school library should be very different than the elementary school library. That's for sure. Yeah,
exactly. See, and I'm thinking to myself, why are these people banning books on LGBTQ? And, you know, I think a student should be allowed to read stuff in the context mm-hmm. of what they need to learn for school. I mean, to me, I'm thinking nothing. Well, I can't say that either. There are some things that should be not taught in schools, obviously, some really outlandish things. But again, that relies on the schools to determine the demographics of the schools, the kids, you know, the kids in the school, what's appropriate for their school based on what the kids and their families are like and that kind of stuff. I mean, I grew up that way. And, you know, where I grew up and compared to where I went after I grew up and left home, two different environments. So, you know, sure. I rely on the school boards and the parents, the PTA, so to speak, to kind of take care of all that stuff. I mean, that's their basic function, and far as that goes. So CRT, I think I agree with you, should not be forced down kids' throats. I think it should be up to the school district to decide what's appropriate for them. I mean, if all the parents in the school district say, I want to teach this, well, yeah, you know, something to think about. I mean, you don't necessarily have to agree with it, but you got to give the parents a chance to say yes or no. You just can't go in there with a big stick and say, well, no, you can't do this. And then the parents get upset.
Well, the problem is a lot of times the schools are lying to parents about it. And I mean, that's the title of my first chapter. And I did some research on a school district where I live, near where I live, called Riverside Unified School District from Riverside, California. And in 2021, they denied teaching critical race theory to parents on three different occasions, three different meetings. And the problem with that, though, is 1 year earlier, they voted and passed an ethnic studies course. A lot of times they say it's ethnic studies when actually it's critical race theory. But they passed an ethnic studies curriculum, a brand new one, and then showed a PowerPoint presentation of the new program. Yeah. And the new program included 27 learning objectives. And four of the learning objectives had the words critical race theory in the title. Hmm. 11 more directly referenced critical race theory principles. So we had 15 out of 27 learning objectives either directly had critical race theory in it or had, you know, at least referred to and discussed a critical race theory tenet or principle. And at the same time, a year later, they were telling parents that, no, we don't teach critical race theory. And some parents obviously got very upset.
Right.
Because they felt like they were being, you know, lied to by mm-hmm. these school officials, and they were. You know, and they're not the only ones. You know, there was other school districts that, you know, that we discussed. North Carolina, one of the chapters in my book was about North Carolina. Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, upon taking office, had been hearing complaints about critical race theory, among other things. Mm-hmm. And so he set up what's called a FACTS task force. And FACTS is an acronym for something, F-A-C-T-S, and I don't remember what it is off the top of my head. But they set up a website where parents could, you know, log on and post the concerning things that were going on. And within a couple of months, they had 500 entries. And then they came out with a report. And this report detailed just exactly the kind of things that we're talking about here. Hmm. You know, a child came home. His father was a policeman. And the teacher had been teaching that all policemen were racist, that police stations needed to be defunded, et cetera, et cetera. And saying, you know, religion was bad. And so when the boy came home, he was very upset and told his parent, his father about it. And so his father went to talk to the teacher. And the teacher said to him, well, and the father said, I don't want my son in this class. I want him out. And the teacher goes, well, sorry, it's mandatory. There's nothing we can do about it. So he went to the principal. I want my son out of this class. Yeah, nothing we can do about it. It's mandatory. You know, it's required by the state. Then he went to the school board and said this, you know, yep, I want my son out of this class. Nope, sorry, mandatory. Nothing we can do about it. And he goes, okay, show me where it's mandatory. Show me the law, the bill, the policy, whatever it is. Show me where it's required that my son takes this course. Oh, it's right out on the website. It's on the, you know, the course curriculum. It's all explained out there. And the parent went out there and found no such requirement. Huh. So not only was he being lied to, he was being lied to by the teacher, the principal, and the school board about this. And so, and unfortunately, that is the example more than, hey, parents, this is what we're going to offer to your children. Would you like to opt them in or out? And what they're doing is they're just opting your children in and hoping you don't notice.
Wow. So, I mean, that brings, so that kind of brings up another question. Why are these people so adamant about teaching this stuff?
Well, at their core, they are Marxists. And for somebody who is our age and lived a good portion of our life during the Cold War, I think we have a pretty good idea of who Marxists are.
Right.
They are anti-capitalism. They are, you know, they want, you know, government. They want the government to control the means of production. You know, because if everybody doesn't make the exact same amount every year, then somehow life is unfair. And so they want to use Marxism to make everything equal. And of course, those who enforce the Marxism, they believe themselves are more equal than the others, because if you and I get one share, whatever the share is, they're going to give themselves 10 shares or 100 shares or 1,000 shares.
Right.
They're going to get to eat beef. They're going to get to live in a private home. They're going to get to drive a private car. And you and I are going to live, you know, in, you know, some kind of, you know, cell block, basically, crowded with a bunch of people. We will not be able to have a privately owned vehicle. We'll have to use public transportation. And yeah, our protein is going to be crickets, you know. And so, and I mean, and the thing you got to know about Marxists is that they only hate wealth when it belongs to someone else. They are never offended by wealth when they themselves are the wealthy persons.
Right.
But this has been going on for 150 years. This is nothing new.
Well, yeah. Marxism has been around since, you know, before 1917.
Oh, yeah. Big time. 1800s was 1840s or 50s, I believe, when Marx came out with his book. But and Engels. But they are still there. They are still working to end capitalism. And in order to end capitalism and install global socialist utopia, as they probably see it, America is the number one problem. They need to get rid of liberty. They need to get rid of guns. They need to get rid of the United States. And as long as the United States is a free society, global socialist utopia will never happen. And so that's what these folks are working towards. And they were working on, you know, class envy and other things for a long time. But the thing is, race is a very effective way to divide people. You know, you call someone a racist, most people will back down in 2 seconds, because it's a horrible, it's a disgusting thing to call a human being. It's a horrible thing to call them. And so most people don't have the courage to go, you know what? I am not a racist, and you owe me an apology. They just, and they just back down. And so that's who these people are. They are working for a one world government, you know, a la old Soviet Russia, Red China. And oh, yeah, by the way, the model is Red China. And you will get a social score. And you know, if you do something or say something on social media, for example, they'll be able to shut off your bank account for a week or two. You better hope you got enough food in the cabinet to feed you for a week or two. If you are lucky enough to have a privately owned vehicle, maybe they take it back. Yep, you just lost your privileges. I mean, that's what life in, you know, and the other thing they're trying to do is the central bank digital currency, you know, because with central bank digital currency, they can turn your bank account off. Boom. You know, I mean, that gives them that kind of authority. That's what they're going for. And so Red China is the model for their vision of the future. And so they think everything needs to be equal. Like the top 1% of people in the country, wealth-wise, if 13% of the nation is African-American and 30% is Hispanic and 49% is white, and then the other parts are various indigenous and other, various other races, in the eyes of these Marxists, the top 1% should consist of 13% African-American, 30% Hispanic, 49% white. And if anything is off, they need to come in and they need to fix it. And of course, it's not that it's, I don't know what the numbers are for the top 1%, but it's pretty safe to assume that white people make up more than 49%.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and when people say things like that, you say, okay, well, should we apply those same rules to the NBA and to the NFL? You know, if you've got, you know, only 13% of your athletes are allowed to be African American, only 30% are allowed to be Hispanic American, you know, and you have to have at least 49% white athletes in order to be fair, in order to have equity. And it's a ridiculous statement. It just really is. And so anyway, that's who these people are. They're the same people who have been here since the Russian Revolution, since the takeover of North Korea, since the takeover of Venezuela. And the thing is, Venezuela went Marxist not too long ago. And at one point, they had one of the richest societies in the Americas after the United States. And they've got a lot of oil reserves, a lot of natural resources, and their folks were doing quite well. And then a Marxist convinced them that they weren't getting their fair share. So they elected a Marxist government. And a couple of years later, they were killing their pets to eat because the supermarkets had no food. You know, and I mean, they think they're going to make everything fair, but the people they pretend to help are always the ones who suffer the most under their leadership.
Well, I remember how and the old USSR going on. Was.
Say again?
So I remember how the old USSR was.
Oh, big time. Big time. And so, I mean, this isn't new, no. You know, and when you tell this to a Marxist, they go, oh, that's because it wasn't done right in the past. Oh, that's not real socialism. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. As soon as you give somebody the authority and the power to make everything fair, like we just discussed, they, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And they always give themselves more than their fair share in the end. Always.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's just a given. I think that's more the human condition in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You know, and that's one of the great things about the Constitution. And capitalism is, in order for capitalism to be successful, you have to have a two-way relationship where the relationship benefits both parties. And if it doesn't benefit both parties, it's not going to last. That business will go out of business. Successful businesses find a way to meet a need, and they attract customers. And those customers are willing to pay for those services, whatever they may be, because they get value from it. Nobody gets value from Marxism.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, standing in line for a moldy piece of bread was never a good thing. I remember those old pictures of the bread lines.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, You know, and like the people, like the Venezuelans, you know, they shot themselves in the foot, you know, because someone convinced them that somehow they weren't getting their fair share. Well, they definitely got more of their fair share when under a capitalist society than they did under a Marxist one.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's a thing. It's starting to become a thing now. You know, everybody's headed for the right side of the divide these days. More and more governments are headed in that direction. It's going to be interesting down the road. France just had their elections here today in this, you know, last couple of days, and Le Pen has won. So it's going to be interesting.
Oh, so Macron is out. Good.
Well, no, he's still prime minister. He just doesn't have a majority anymore.
Okay.
Le Pen's group took the majority in the election. So they're controlling the shots. He's just basically he's going to become a talking head.
Okay. So the Marxist, I don't know if he's a true Marxist, but he's definitely a socialist. And again, when I say Marxist, I'm referring to fascists and communists and socialists. It's all the same. It's just different shades of the same color, where the government is totalitarianism and they rule and they tell you to do everything. And if you argue with the government, you're going to be in a lot of trouble, maybe prison, maybe worse. And so Macron is definitely the socialist. He's definitely the socialist, and it sounds like the capitalists, the pro freedom folks in France, just took over that country, which is a good thing.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Biggest thing I'm looking for right now down the road with that kind of stuff is how long is the EU going to hold together?
That's a very good question as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to be watching that one. So I got one last question for you.
Okay.
What's your goal with this message about CRT? I mean, as far as the US is concerned, what do you think, where do you think we should be?
Well, the goal for me for writing, the reason I wrote this book, is to help parents. They were seeing and hearing things coming out of their children's school during COVID. They were hearing lessons that was like, that sounds weird. And so they were tuning in and they were quite upset about the things that were being taught to their children. And then when they began to look up things like critical race theory to find out what more about it, the internet was not very friendly to them. You know, if you do a Google search for critical race theory, you know, the first 60 or 50 hits tell you that critical race theory is the most awesome thing in the world. It's great. It's going to get rid of racism anytime now. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the exact opposite. And so I wrote this book to provide a reliable referenced resource for parents to look at to understand what critical race theory was, but also to give them advice on what to do if they were to find critical race theory in their children's school. So, for example, one of the best things you can do if you're unsure if your child is being exposed to CRT, go to the online course descriptions. And we've already kind of talked about this a little bit. Just about every school these days has all of the class descriptions online. Go out there, look them up, and look at the course descriptions. Now, you're not going to find the words critical race theory. Most likely you might, but chances are you're not. But that doesn't mean they're not being taught critical race theory. Look for words like oppression, white supremacy, systemic racism, marginalization, social justice. When you see those types of phrases and words, your child is being exposed to critical race theory, and that's how you find out. And that's one of the tips that my book offers to parents. And so my goal, what I would love to see nationwide, would be a fact-based, historically accurate version of history. You know, critical race supporters, they always accuse people like me, oh, you just don't want to teach history. Yes, I do. But I want to teach an honest version of history. I want We need to look at our past. We need to have an unflinching, honest, 100% look at our history so that we're not doomed to repeat it. Again, another one of those, if you don't study history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
So let's be honest, but you know what? It has to be age appropriate. It can't be creating racial divisions between children as you go. It can't be too used as a tool to fill, you know, to fulfill a political purpose. And the political purpose is to teach these kids to hate America and to hate each other. And so what I want, let's talk about race, but let's do it in an honest way. It was a horrible thing, but we ended it. We've moved on, and we still have more things to do, but we've come a long way. And you know what? African-American children, a lot of great things have happened to you in this country as well. Slavery does not define you as a race in this country. There have been great inventors. There have been great patriots. There have been great heroes. There have been great sports figures. There have been great musicians. You know, the African-American influence over our culture is undeniable. Right. Those are positive things. You know, those are the things that critical race theory never mentions. Never. But a fact-based, historically accurate history course should include those things. It should be done the same for Asian American students, Hispanic American students, even white students. And yeah, we know that history is largely white centric. Okay, we get that. That's why, you know, we do the other ethnic studies. But you know what? You know who's also going to benefit from taking that African American studies course? The white children, the Hispanic children, the Asian children. They're all going to learn from those classes, all of them. Yeah. That is my vision.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Well, I hope we can bring it about. I mean, sounds like it should be. I mean, I'm not all, you know, being a career military, I never really looked at race at all because, you know, my brother's in arms, it didn't really matter what the color of your skin was.
Okay? Exactly.
As long as you knew that this guy had your six when you were out there in a foxhole, it didn't matter. Okay.
Exactly.
All that mattered was what he was going to do for you and what you were going to do for him. End of discussion. And I, you know, I, of course, like anything else, I saw all the different stuff. And of course I remember all the bad things from the late '60s and the '70s and further on and all this other stuff on the latest go arounds. But I have to ask myself, you know, what can be done to change it, to make it better? I mean, well, there's a lot of theories floating around out there. Some good, some not so good, as far as that goes. But yeah, I mean, promoting something that's going to divide people is never a good thing.
It's never going to work. You know, they say, oh, this is going to help. How can it help? How can it possibly help? You know, if you want to get along with your neighbor, do you spend your time fighting over, you know, that fence post that's right on the border? Do you spend your time fighting over that post? Does it belong to you or him? You know, I mean, and every conversation you have is centered about that stupid fence post that some, you know, that some home builder stupidly put right on the border so you guys could fight over it. You know, is that going to get you anywhere? Of course not.
No,
of course not. And it's the same thing with these divisions of race. Teaching these children to be angry at each other over race is not going to make it better. But I agree with you. When I was in the service, you know what? I didn't look at anybody as a white person or a black person or a Hispanic person. It was, are you going to come today and do your job?
Right.
Are you going to successfully get your job done, do your part so the team accomplishes the mission? Right. That's what I cared about.
Yep.
Boom. That was it. Yep. I cared about nothing else. That was it.
Yep. I agree. Well, all right. Well, I think we'll leave it at that. So, tell everybody where they can find your book.
Well, my book, Critical Race Theory in Your School, How to Fight Back, is on Amazon, and it's also on Barnes & Noble. And also, I have a Facebook page that I mentioned earlier, Critical Race Theory in Your School, How to Fight Back by Dr. George Maurer. I'm not into cute titles. I like putting the title right out there so it's easy to find. But what I've created with this Facebook page is I have created a place where those who are concerned about critical race theory, you can go to that Facebook page, and every morning I try to find two or three important CRT news stories, and I post them on the Facebook page. So it's kind of your like your one-stop place to go for the latest updates. And, you know, if you're not interested, then don't look that day, you know. But if you are, come on by, follow, like, all those kind of good things. But, you know, I put my personal opinions in there. Sometimes I crack a joke or two. Sometimes I try to make light of things, even though it's a very serious subject. But the other thing that goes on is as a CRT opponent, I get attacked pretty hard. Yeah. And some people say some pretty horrible things about me. Fortunately, I have thick skin. I don't let it bother me. But actually, I sit back and I chuckle a lot at a lot of these comments. A lot of people that I know stop by and look, and they're like, oh, geez, look at this guy. Oh, man. And they, you know, they find it funny. Mm-hmm. You know, they find it funny. And chances are you may find it funny, too. And I think that these CRT supporters, if you really want to know who these CRT supporters are, come out to my Facebook page and look at one of these threads, these conversation threads. You'll see exactly who these folks are. And they're horrible human beings. There's just no other way. Yeah. They're horrible. They're racist. And that's the other thing. CRT supporters are the most racist people in the world. Just, again, look at one of these threads. You know, we're against racism. No, you're not. You're for racism. You're the most racist people in the whole world. When, you know, you love racism. You pretend you don't, but you do.
Wow. That's pretty sad. But yeah.
Like I said, come look at a conversation thread. You'll see what I'm talking about.
I'll have to go check that out. Well, sir, I appreciate it. I'm going to wrap this up. So I appreciate you coming on the show. And as I said, this show goes out all over the place. It's pretty widely distributed. So there's a really good chance that you're going to get some attention out of this. You've got free rein to use this segment here for your own media, and you can do whatever you want with it once I get it uploaded here, and then you can kind of take it from there.
Well, I will definitely share this on my timeline.
Okay. That's
what I always do with these. So you're probably going to get some hateful comments too. So be ready.
Okay. I've got a public page that's right for that stuff. They can have it.
All right. Okay, good.
No worries. So, all right, sir, I'm going to let you go and I'll close this shop. And then, as I said, this episode will get posted on July 10th.
Wonderful. Perfect. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I'm grateful for your time. I really am.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Good luck. So as I said, Dr. George Maurer's all about this CRT stuff. And it's an eye-opener. It taught me a few things. And I'm glad to hear it. So now I'm going to close up shop here and welcome everybody back. As I said, there will be more videos coming out on various things. These type of interviews I post on Wednesdays. So as I said, this one will come out on July 10th. So I hope to see you again in the next video. Sláinte. While I still have your attention, I want to tell you about how you can support this podcast and my efforts in general. This podcast will continue to remain free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps on my YouTube channel, Krana Biha, and for the first 30 days on my Substack page, Krana Biha, the Tree of Life, Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. Decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. I've set up a donation tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and a donation page on my website at www.crownandbeyond.com, which are all linked to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Any amount's appreciated. Now, about my website. Easiest way to find it is to copy it from the background behind me if you're watching this video. If you're listening to an audio version, copy the website name from the podcast logo shown. Search for it and enjoy your visit. Lastly, I'm trying to sell some copies of my book, Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found at major book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Lulu. You can also buy from me direct through the bookstore page on my website. Fugitives in the New United States is available in hardcover, paperback, and digital form. Free if you're a Kindle subscriber. It's written for young adults and older, so it's safe. If this were a movie, it'd be rated PG. Look for Fugitives in the New United States at your favorite book retailer and enjoy it. I sell enough, I'll find the time to write the second book in this series. So I want to thank you for your support, even if it's just a like and a subscribe on my social media accounts. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll return again next week for another episode of The Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube video or audio version. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, which is to shout out to the world about all the bad things our governments are doing to us. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill.